Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Group Answers. My name is Chris Surratt, and this is episode 83, and I'm here with my co-host, Brian Daniel.
Back off the road, Chris.
I want to talk about that because this is exciting. We're excited about our guest today, which we'll get to here in a second, but this is even bigger.
Even bigger.
Yeah, you are producing a movie.
Yep, that's right.
We were supposed to record this yesterday. And Brian's like, no, I'm going to be on the road producing this movie, so we can't do it. So we had to push it. So he big leagued us. Yeah. But what are you doing? What's the movie?
I'm moonlighting, as you know, with the Wagner Cruise production team on Mission Impossible 12. It's scheduled to release sometime there about 2028 or 30. We haven't decided yet.
I can see that. Is Tom Cruise still alive at this point?
Well... Actually, Tom Cruise still looks pretty good, I guess, I think he turned 50. But no, thanks for asking. We are producing a movie in collaboration with the Urban Alternative and Lifeway Films. It's called Kingdom Men Rising. And it is, will actually have theatrical release. Wow. So it's a Fathom event. You know what that is. So Fathom is just it's a really good idea is what they do. So in those times when theaters don't usually have a lot of people coming like Monday or Tuesday night, they'll do things like the 25th anniversary of Dirty Dancing, or they'll do things like Casablanca on the big screen again, which was something we did with our small group a few years ago.
That's cool.
And but what does best for Fathom are actually faith-based movies. So our dates are April 29th and 30th. And so I would encourage you to get the guys together in your group and plan on going to see that. We have, my responsibility as producer is kind of on the logistical side, on the budget management side. I'm working closely with the director. We've created like what they call a beat sheet or a storyboard. You don't write, it's documentary style, so you don't really write that like the script. And so what we've done is basically outline the story, and so we're shooting to the story. But just this past weekend, so this is posting in mid-January, so this was early December when we did this. We were in the barbershop in Dallas. And have you seen the LeBron, the shop?
Yep.
Have you seen any of that?
Oh, yeah.
So we kind of did that vibe with Tony Evans and his two sons, Anthony and Jonathan.
I saw the pictures. It looked
and
really cool.
Heisman Trophy winner Tim Brown and urban gospel singer. I think that's how Kirk Franklin is referred to. Kirk
was in the room?
Kirk was there.
Wow.
So there were five of those guys in this little barbershop.
Huh.
And Chris, so this was something that we kind of concepted and envisioned, and it was exactly like, it's rare that things work exactly like you expect them to, but those guys, they knew,
awesome.
You would almost think that they knew what guys like Kirk and Tim have been in front of cameras their whole life, and so, they knew what we were trying to do, and they had amazing insights, and of course, Dr. Evans was the sage in the room, and they all looked to him for that guidance about biblical masculinity and what it means to be a kingdom man in today's world. It was great. We had guys for 3 hours in that
room. Wow.
And I even got Tim Brown to tell us the story about the two punt returns against Michigan State.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, wow.
So he was great. That was, I wouldn't call it bucket list necessarily, but meeting Tim Brown was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Somebody I used to watch on television.
Yeah. Dr. Evans, a guest of Group Answers.
That's right.
I don't remember the episode number, but you can go back.
Yeah, that's right. You can look in the archives.
Yeah.
But speaking of television and movies.
I know. That was a great segue. Our guest today, tell us a little bit about Scarlett, Brian.
We have the lovely and talented Scarlett Hilton-Biddle in the studio.
Common spelling.
Cue the canned applause. Scarlett is a very professional wife and mother to her family in Middle Tennessee. She loves sign language with her daughters, nachos by herself. That's something we'll want to follow up on. Writing for her friends and dreaming of being a famous chef while at the same time spilling the cheese dust from the macaroni box on the kitchen counter and using it anyway. Scarlet treasures the freedom of resting in the work of Jesus and hopes to help others rest as well. She is the author of the just released Afraid of All Things, Tornadoes, Cancer, Adoption, and Other Stuff You Need the Gospel For. But wait, her next book is already scheduled to be released in July of 2019, and that's for girls, right, Scarlett?
Yes.
He Numbered the Pores on My Face, which we're really looking forward to that, too, and hope that becomes something like a small group study down the road. So welcome to the Group Answers Show, Scarlett Hiltebeitel.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
And you mentioned before we went on the air that your husband, Brandon, may have had something to do with that bio.
Oh, yeah. He totally wrote it. Okay. I felt very awkward having to, you know, write my bio in the third person. So I said, Brandon, write this for me, please.
That's awesome.
He knows my strengths and weaknesses. Yeah. Cooking is not my strength.
Well, Brandon is a frequent co-host of the show, but we kicked him out.
Yeah.
We decided that it would be detrimental to have him in the room.
Definitely.
Yeah. So we're glad to just have you. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the family real quick. I think Brandon's talked about that on the show a little bit. So it's you and Brandon and three girls, right?
Yes.
And just recently adopted.
Yes.
And you guys are now kind of, what's the word I want to use here? Experimental?
Failed,
experiential?
Maybe? Failed farmers? Yeah, we're not great at it. We had, we have three girls, a seven-year-old, five-year-old Joy, that's the one we adopted a year and a half ago, and Dewey, her real name is Brooklyn, but she goes by Dewey, she's three, and we moved onto a farm. I mean, we lived in apartments and townhouses until March, and now we're on a farm, and we had chickens, and then we got a dog to protect the chickens, but he ate the chickens, and then he started trying to eat the neighbor's chickens, and so now there's no dog, no animals, no plants.
So guys,
failure.
The dog's name, and Chris, I don't know if you were tracking with this story like I was. I was captivated by the story of Raccoon the dog.
I sit on Brandon's team.
I mean,
so
it wasn't.
We hear this story.
Yeah,
all the
it
time.
Was a yes. three-act story yes. with the beginning, middle, and end,
yeah.
and ended somewhat tragically, at least in the cinematic version, not in death, but Raccoon had to go. And
yes, he has been rehomed. Dewey was saying in the car on the way over here, she missed Raccoon, but.
And
he's in a better place.
And I would say, and Chris, I would say, if you're not following Scarlett Hiltebeitel on social media, you
that.
Are
yes.
missing out.
Best
I
follow.
Not, that's not an exaggeration.
Oh, yeah, no. Best follow on Instagram ever.
Aw.
Stories for days.
Yeah,
my kids are pretty entertaining.
Yes. Well, just the way that you phrase things, like the one that I remember is the one in the tire. Who hasn't been in Discount Tire, right,
oh,
with
yeah.
your family and had to sit there for an hour? And, you know, they don't have a playground there.
Right.
So you got to figure it out. And one of the daughters is actually wearing a Superman cape, I think, or something like that. I don't remember the post exactly, but I remember that and laughing out loud. I told Karen, I said, I think I would pay to follow Scarlett.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
I think I'd pay a monthly. I mean, it wouldn't be, you know, we're talking 99 cents.
Hey, I'll take it.
Wow.
Let's see if you can monetize that.
Wow, you are talking to a starving artist.
That's right.
An author, yeah. All right, so I want to jump in. I'm so excited about your book, and we'll get to that. But I'm also is excited about just your growing up. I mean, you have an amazing story.
Yep.
I was a child of the 80s, as were you, Brian, right? So one of my favorite shows was every Saturday night, SNL, Saturday Night Live.
Yep.
And we were talking earlier. I think that was the best cast ever. Don't you agree, Brian?
Yeah,
the late
I don't
80s?
Think it's close. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, oh my goodness.
Sandler was on there.
Who else? Phil Hartman, John Lovitz, your
Dana
mom,
Carvey.
Victoria Jackson.
Oh, you gave it away.
Oh, well, you know, we were bearing the lead. But I want to know, what was that like? I mean, because you've talked and you've written before about, you know, being in the green room at SNL and sitting on John Lovitz's lap and all that stuff. What was it like growing up in show business?
In case you missed it, Scarlett's mother is Victoria Jackson, the former SNL cast member on, how long was she on the show?
6 years.
It seems longer, but for a 6 years cast member, she crossed over with some of the ones that went on to do the most in movies, probably out of all the cast.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, well, how was it? So, you know, I was born in 86 and that's when she started. So I was 6 months old when she got the job. So we lived in LA and then we moved to New York in a whirlwind. And, you know, I was so young. So when people say, what was it like? I say, well, there were really good jelly packets that I liked to eat right out of the jelly packet. You know, it's like the things I remember are very childlike things. I did not realize what a cool thing it was until I got older and people said, what? That's, and I'm like, why is that cool? You know, it's just, it's all I knew. So my memories of it being something that I even noticed was an unusual thing are from when I was older and, you know, getting back together with the comedians as a teenager. And I knew them because I grew up with them, but it was only then that I really realized that it was unusual at all because, you know, I mean, it was, I was thinking about this on the way over because I haven't talked about it much. I just kind of lived, you know, just kind of did life. I haven't, this is my first interview. But, you know, I think about, you know, Y2K. So Y2K, my mom had already stopped SNL. And I think people don't think, people who are not in entertainment don't think about how it's all project based. Sorry, I just bumped the microphone. So like, if you have, if you're on Seinfeld, what was that, 9 seasons or something? You do it and then it's over and then you're just a person like eating and going to bed and waking up. Like it's not like a camera follows you around for the rest of your life. And I think for those of us who are not in that world, we think it's this lifelong career, but it's really just, you know, you're super lucky if you get any. So anyway, after SNL, I was mostly just living normal suburban life. But then we would, you know, fly with my mom to do a stand-up gig in Erie, Pennsylvania or whatever. And Y2K, I can't remember the town, but my sister was probably, she's 8 years younger than I am. She was probably 5 or 6 and I'm a teenager. And, you know, my book is Afraid of All the Things because super afraid. So of course I was afraid the world was gonna end. So I'm just like, that's what I was thinking about. But I just remember being in the comedy club and sitting in the wings watching, it was Dana Carvey, Kevin Nealon, John Lovitz, and my mom doing like a stand-up thing for Y2K. Mm. And then I'm sitting there watching them. And then it was midnight, and so me and my little sister went out on stage and sang Auld Lang Syne. And so stuff like that, I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. Because I was a teenager at that point, you know? But as the five-year-old running around and seeing Adam Sandler jump through the fake glass window in his underwear and get up, I was more just, like, confused and like, what's happening? Where's the lemon pound cake? Why haven't they brought it out yet? It was here yesterday, you know? So I don't know. Awesome. Does that answer your question?
Oh yeah,
and so many more.
Oh, I know. I have follow-ups, but I'm not. We'll do them off air.
The Y2K thing, I forgot. That's 19 years ago, and a lot of people may not even remember that. Well, some might not even remember that. That was a huge thing.
Yeah.
And now it's nothing. It comes up anecdotally, and that's where I remember thinking, really? So the computers can't change the date? It's going to be the end of the world? That seems strangely fantastic.
We were doing a church service that night, and we were just waiting for the lights to go off and, you know, chaos to happen, and it was like, nah, it's okay.
So Scarlett, I mean, I think like a lot of us, you know, for me, my parents divorced when I was 4, and I was sometime in my late 30s. You know, I never had a relationship with my dad. And it was sometime in my late 30s, I thought, wait a minute, that's kind of jacked up.
Hmm.
But up until then, it was just other people had dads that were involved in their lives, and I didn't. Hmm. But there was a moment where it's like, wait a minute. And that's when I started to think that this has had an effect on me. And I realized that to cope with that, I had to some degree killed a part of my heart. And I realized that losing a part of your heart is really easy. Getting it back is a little more demanding and requires a little bit more. And so, you know, the subtitle of the book is, you know, Other Stuff You Need the Gospel For, which is the crux of it. Mm-hmm. So I'd be interested, I mean, looking back now with where you are, how did those formative years shape your adult life?
Well, that's something, like you said, that I had to look back. And even just in writing this book, I was thinking, where did this come from? My parents got divorced too when I was 5. And so, I mean, when I think back, that's when it started because my memories of SNL are fun and, like I said, childlike. But at the same time, I think, so I was raised Baptist. So I was learning the gospel and learning the Bible and going to Sunday school. But I was also sitting in the wings of stand-up comedy clubs. And, you know, I mean, most stand-up comics say some stuff. And so in hindsight, I think it was kind of confusing growing up in that environment because Hollywood is just a very magnified view of the world, really. And people were so kind, and I have such great memories. But also, I think I was very confused by a lot of what I saw. And the divorce was a huge, just like you said, it was a huge thing. I didn't realize a family could break apart. I was 5 years old. I didn't realize you could leave your home and never go back. So my mom stopped her job. I lost my dad. You know, they got divorced. We moved away. And that's when all the anxiety, you know, that's, I think, what kind of started all that. I think I'm also just wired that way, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that probably had a lot to do with it in hindsight.
So I read an article that either was about Richard Foster or that he wrote one time. And he said, I'll never forget it. He said, we are always being spiritually formed.
Hmm.
So one way or the other, we're being spiritually formed. So, you know, all those experiences culminate into the writing of Afraid of All Things.
Afraid of All the Things.
All the Things, which is available now. And
as of yesterday. Dropped yesterday.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And yeah, so here we go. So with that in mind, you know, not everyone has a parent that, you know, was an SNL cast member. Who did you have in mind when you sat down to write this book?
Well,
or maybe when you finished it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go way back to the beginning. So I should have brought it today, but I have a 40-page first draft of this book I wrote when I was 9. It was not called Afraid of All the Things yet, but I did write third person. I wasn't afraid of it back then. I wrote third person back cover copy, and the back cover said, all misspelled, Scarlett has many ulcers and troubles. Will she ever overcome her fears? Read the book to find out. So back then, I think I was writing for myself. To just, and it, you know, it was just kind of a 40-page list of fears because I didn't know Jesus yet. I had heard about him, but I didn't know him. But it's a long story. But this book, the real adult, the version for adults that's written by an adult, I wrote it for people like me who are, you know, who battle anxiety and panic and fear. I also wrote it just for all Christians. I was talking to Mary Wiley about this. You guys know she does marketing for B&H.
Mm-hmm.
And she had read the book and she said, I didn't think anxiety was a thing. And then I read it and then I saw, you know, that, you know, and I was thinking about that. And I thought, I think all Christians, they might not call it anxiety, but whether it's battling doubt or just struggling to trust God, you know, or like, God, why did you do this? Why did this horrible tragedy happen in my life and not understanding it? You know, I think that's what the Bible speaks into. Be anxious for nothing. Cast your anxieties on him. So I think whether you are someone like me who's just very prone to anxiety or someone who's just a Christian who wants to rest in the gospel, those are the people I'm thinking of or that I was thinking of when I wrote it.
This topic really speaks to me, honestly, because I have fought anxiety through my life. And actually, mine came on later. In life, I can actually remember kind of the first moment that I had my panic attack that I thought was a heart attack at the time. I mean, I actually went to the hospital because I said, I'm having a heart attack. I'm dying. And so we went to the hospital and did all the tests. And they said, no, you're having a panic attack. And I was like, I can't have a panic attack. I don't have. And that started a series, actually, of anxiety through my life and, you know, panic attacks. And it's just kind of been something that's been there for a while. And I just remember that first moment. Do you remember when it happened to you and when you kind of recognized this is a part of my life?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that exact thing. But it was when I think I was 6. And it's in the first chapter of my book is when I'm talking about my, I'll call it my non-appendix non-rupture. Because I was really convinced that my appendix was rupturing. I was 6 and I had just learned about it from the book Madeline with a little redhead. You know that book? There are 12 little girls in 2 straight lines.
Mm.
Her appendix ruptures. So as soon as I knew that was a thing, I was like, well, that's definitely going to happen to me. So I became obsessed with it. And it was right after my parents had gotten divorced, right after we'd moved. And I was in a grocery store with my new adoptive dad, or he was my stepdad at the time, and my mom, and I collapsed and they took me to the hospital. And I was like, this is it, I'm dying. And then, I mean, I kind of laugh about it now, but it's not funny. But
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it was a new doctor in a new city who was like, hey, maybe don't read Madeline anymore. You're a picture of health. You know, that's what doctors would tell me. They called it nervous stomach because I had stomach aches on the way to school every day. And I mean, the panic attack thing carried over into my adult life for sure. So yeah, but it started really young. I didn't have words for it yet, but I was worried about everything.
Chris, in terms of groups, I mean, it seems like we're hearing more about like what Scarlett's talking about. It's not that it's not always been there, but we're these things are more common in the vernacular conversation today. People talk about openly.
They're more willing to talk about
panic
it,
and anxiety.
Yep.
And, you know, when it comes to like group life, you know, I think most of us would espouse this doing life together. I mean, that's one of the components of an ideal group. What kind of interactions have you had as you're in and out of conversations about this kind of thing? Is this something that comes up? Is this something that group leaders that group leaders have to manage, you know, with group members, that group members say, look, man, I'm really struggling with this sort of thing? Do you get questions like that from group leaders and group coaches?
Yeah, it definitely comes up. And I think it is the openness to talk about topics like this. And I'm so excited about your book coming out because I think it needs to be a discussion. You know, it's become more normal to talk about mental issues and mental health, and I think it's definitely coming up more with groups and in groups. And I've told my story in my groups, and every time I do, I get somebody that comes up usually afterward and says, "You know what? That's my story. I've suffered with that. I've battled it. I'm afraid to talk about it." And so it just opens up that dialogue that wouldn't be there if I didn't go first. You know, talking about it as a group leader. And so, Scarlett, I'm curious, you know, you write a lot for like the Lifeway blog about group leaders. And so what would you say when it comes to being a group leader and fighting fear and anxiety, and how would you address that as a group leader?
Do you mean how would I address it as a topic of discussion?
Yeah. And if you are a group leader and you battle that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would just encourage people to be open about it. Like you said, they're definitely, my daughters are peeking in the window. Okay. Goodbye.
That's great.
I wish we had this on video.
Yeah. I would just encourage people to, like you said, if you're willing to share, you know, my pastor would say below the line of shame, that, that's what opens other people up to be able to share their own struggles. And I know with anxiety, there's so many, and I write about this in the book, but there's so many different types of anxiety. There's the kind that is physical, like you have a thyroid problem or a chemical imbalance, or there's the kind where you have unconfessed sin and you are not living in the light, you know, or there's the spiritual kind that I talked about, like you're not trusting God. But one kind of anxiety I know just comes from living in isolation. So if you either as a leader struggle with anxiety, or if you don't, just being open with your own struggles as a leader and not feeling like you need to be this perfect, you know, Christian who has it all together, because none of us are. That's what I would encourage leaders to do. I just know that for me, small groups changed for me when I learned that I didn't have to put on this thing. It could just be real people, you know, walking in the light together, because I had a lot of anxieties as a small group member and leader, just being in. It's kind of scary to be in community when you're an anxious person, you know?
Right.
So I don't know.
I'm curious, when you're battling that, how do you overcome it in the moment when you have that anxiety and you know you're kind of in the spotlight and you're the group leader or you're in the group? How do you battle that?
That's a good question. I think you have to just force yourself to live in the light. You know, I have some people I do life with now and we confess sin to each other. And I didn't have that until kind of recently because I was just kind of too afraid. I mean, afraid of all the things, you know, I was too afraid to let people close enough to, you know, it was kind of, I was afraid that they wouldn't accept me if they knew all my flaws. I was afraid that they would have an expectation of me as, and, you know, thinking as a small group leader right now, I'm kind of leading with three other people. my job is getting babysitters basically in my current small group. But yeah, I just had a lot of fear. I forgot what I was saying.
So I got
I lost my train of thought.
All right. So here's one for you. I'm interested in like the process. So, you know, you referenced the fact that early on, of course, like a lot of people, you, weren't gospel driven in dealing with these things. So that process of moving from that point to where you are now and how to hold the gospel up to these things, you know, these maladies, these fears, these anxieties that you're talking about to where you are now, what does that look like? You know, so what were those benchmarks? What were those moments along the way to where, you know, you felt like God was revealing truth to you in this way, you know, helping you just like, the word in one of the questions that we've got is combat the anxieties and fears.
Yeah,
I think that would be helpful to know as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for, you know, I wrote this book about fear, but I had this gospel light bulb I guess it was about 8 years ago, because I have an 8-year-old and she was a baby. But I grew up hearing the gospel. I grew up, you know, being part of small groups. But the gospel to me, and I don't think I would have worded it this way, but I think a lot of people view it this way. I thought, I need the gospel. I needed Jesus to die to save me, but I better do a really good job after that of being a good Christian, because I will not hear "well done, my good and faithful servant," if I'm not living the life to his standard, you know? And I believed that, and I kind of, so that caused an underlying panic all the time. Like, am I good enough all the time? Am I good enough to lead a group? Am I good enough to be a friend? Am I, you know, is God going to approve of me? And so the light bulb moment happened. I was just in this group. I was in a small group, actually, of pastor's wives. It was this retreat. I was a pastor's wife in Miami. I had a 3-month-old. And I mean, maximum anxiety with your first baby. You know, it's like the scariest thing ever. And I'm trying to keep her alive and be a good mom. And it was all these women, and they were just sharing discipline strategies. And I'm like trying to absorb every word and be a good mom. And then this one woman, she was a very gospel-centered, she was the first person that, maybe not the first person, but this is when it clicked for me. And she just said, you know, I don't try to have perfect kids or perfect home. That's impossible. I just want my kids to see the gospel lived out in our home. So that means if I argue or fight with my husband, I apologize to him in front of them. And then I pray and repent and show them what that looks like. And I ask for Jesus's forgiveness, and I thank him for it, and I apologize to them. And I just, you know, I know they're not going to be perfect. They're not going to think I'm perfect. But she just kind of unlocked this idea for me that the gospel is for every moment, and I can rest in it, and I don't have to strive, because what Jesus did on the cross accomplished everything I'm striving to accomplish, you know? Mm-hmm. So that kind of changed. I mean, it changed my life just sitting in that room with her for 10 minutes. And it changed the way I parent, you know? There's no, you know, if my kid has a screaming meltdown and I snap at her, it's not the end of the world. I turn around and I say, "Mommy needs Jesus. I'm so sorry. I should not have raised my voice at you." You know, it changed my marriage. And then we got connected to a church here that's very gospel focused. So it changed the way I interact with all humans. So obviously in small groups, it really helped me to not view it as this thing I'm trying to do to please God, but rather like I get to walk arm in arm with people who are, you know, pursuing Jesus. We get to do this together. And I found that my fears kind of started to slip away in regards to being involved in and leading a small group when I just was doing life right next to people who love the Lord, who would answer questions with Bible verses that they had memorized out of their brain. Like, instead of saying, "Oh, here's a little anecdote," they would say scripture because it was just pouring out of them, because they were pouring it into their hearts. And so, I mean, that was the season when we pursued adoption, because it was like I was kind of weirdly fearless in that season, because I was really walking in community with other believers and life wasn't so scary because we were together and, you know, looking at the same thing.
Chris, you know, one of the things we know is that we're designed for community, and there's some really good things that come out of community. And that, you know, what Scarlett, one of the things that she pointed out on this idea of anxiety is one of them is this isolation. It seems like we can recommend, you know, afraid of all the things to groups, because minimally it's going to create this air of transparency about these things. Because what you absolutely don't want to do is, you know, is have these kinds of things that you're wrestling with, but try and take them on yourself.
Right. Yeah. I would encourage groups to read this together and have the conversation. Have the conversation, because that's what helped me. Because when I first started going through this, I really was living in isolation. I wasn't in a group, wasn't in a life-giving group, and was just trying to kind of knuckle it through, which I think that's how I was raised, is you don't show vulnerability and you just knuckle it through and you get through it. And all you need is to read the Bible and pray more.
Right.
You know, that was what I was taught. And that's good. You should read your Bible. And I can actually go back to the Bible that I used then, and I went through and circled every verse that talked about anxiety or fear. Every verse. You can go through my Bible and you can see it. I needed that, but I also needed to be around people that were praying for me, that were walking life, that were speaking life into me. So that is essential.
Yeah. And, you know, when you do share those things that you're afraid to share, and my anxiety stuff, I was afraid to share parts of it, like the ways I battle it today, you know. Oh, I forgot to answer you guys that a minute ago. But I, you know, you find that when you do share these things that you're afraid to share, people are hardly ever surprised. It just spurs them on to share their things, and then you feel that connection, and you can kind of walk through it together and have someone who checks in on you, and you know. But how I battle it today, can I go back to that?
Yeah.
Because it's a really simple answer. The verse that says, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. I used to go to that verse and I would think, okay, but how, God? Like, how do I just, here, I'm casting it, but I still feel anxious. So that verse, you know, is the second half of a sentence. And the first half of it says, humble yourselves, therefore, before the hand of a mighty God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting your anxieties on him. So that, I think that's the answer. You know, we get on our faces and we remember who God is and who we are in him. And when we are humble, we remember, oh, he's already conquered everything I'm afraid of. And then it, you know,
it seems
that's
like
how I find it.
I know when I feel those things creeping in, one of the things that I read in the self-talk moment, you know, where you, where you get yourself, is that I remind myself that anxiety is actually an expression of idolatry, you know, because you're assuming that God's not in charge and everything counts on you. Now, we have a role to play. I mean, we're called. I mean, the farmer can't sit in the house and expect his fields to be tilled. But ultimately, it's a sovereign God that we have to trust in his goodness and that he, you know, and that it's going to happen the way that it's designed to happen, the way that he wills it to happen.
That's good.
So, Scarlett, have you ever heard of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network?
Oh, yes, I have.
Yeah, Chris, you're familiar, right?
I'm familiar, yeah.
And did you know, Scarlett, that we are a part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network?
Yes.
Up until we were invited to be a part of that, we were, you know, bumming around in double-A ball.
That's why I'm so nervous right now.
Making our podcast, right? Yeah.
Big leagues.
It's just being in the room, right? I mean, this is big time.
If you would have done this 6 months ago, it would have been like, oh, like 10 people listening.
We'd have been
to
in
it.
The garage.
Yeah. Totally.
We're out in the garage, you know.
It's so legit.
Yeah. Well, we have several sister shows, Making Disciples with Robbie Gowdy and Chris Swain is one. Ask Me Anything, Chris, by, you know, with J.D. Greer is a sister show as well.
Yep.
Also, new to the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network is Rainer on Leadership. So give it up. Can you push the applause button on the...
Just do the...
Yeah, that's right. So Rainer on Leadership, if you don't know, is the newest member of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. This twice-weekly podcast hosted by Tom S. Rainer and Jonathan Howe provides practical training on important issues for church leaders and pastors. Just look up Rainer on Leadership on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today. So we want to be sure and give a shout-out to that newest member. And, you know, that podcast, Chris, has been around a little while and is very popular.
Yeah, that's a great podcast. So.
And Dr. Rainer and Jonathan, and I heard them for the first time at the SBC, and it was... it was a lot of fun to listen to the way that their rapport was just interesting.
They've been doing it a long time.
It was real inviting and very credible. I mean, just the vibe of the show itself.
Kind of the opposite of us.
Yeah. Well, somebody's got to be there, right? We're the foil to Rainer on Leadership.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. Thanks so much, Scarlett. And if they want to find out more, there's a website for the book, right?
Yes. AfraidOfAllTheThings.com.
And they can get to your blog and
everything
your writing
is right
and all that. Awesome. So check that out. It just dropped yesterday. You can get it everywhere that books are sold. But Lifeway.com would be the ideal place if you want to go buy it. So, So check that out. We're so glad that you joined us today. And we'll wrap it up for episode 83. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.